Welcome to Inside the Match, where Alex and Simone talk residency applications.
We are two residents here to help you navigate the match.
For each podcast, we'll bring you residents from various specialties and backgrounds to give advice. So today we have Ryan. Thanks so much for joining us, Ryan.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's good to have an opportunity to talk about the match.
So where are you in residency and what specialty are you in?
So I'm currently a fourth year neurosurgery resident at St. Louis University in St. Louis. And I'm actually in my research year right now. So I'm spending most of the year over at Washington University working with Dr. Albert Kim, who's one of their faculty.
It's so neat that you're able to collaborate with another institution within the same city. So if you feel comfortable, we typically start our podcast with some rapid fire questions. So here we go. Were you AOA?
Yes.
Were you Gold Humanism?
No.
Were you president of your specialty club?
Yes.
And were you involved in research during medical school?
Yes, I was.
So what parts of your ERAS application did interviewers tend to bring up during your neurosurgery interviews?
So I was asked about my research during every interview, if not at least every place that I went to. At least one faculty member asked me about my research. And I'd tell applicants that they should expect this going into interviews. The main goal that people are trying to get is to make sure that applicants are actually familiar with and understand their research, and that they're not just putting on a bunch of case reports or other things that they had minimal role in and don't really know anything about. So my advice would be to make sure that applicants review all of your research before each interview so that you can really discuss it easily. Aside from that, I was commonly asked about my work experience since I happened to take 4 years off in between college doing research and getting a master's degree. That was frequently asked about. And then people in neurosurgery might be the only ones who get this, but I was asked about softball, which I listed as a hobby a lot because if anybody going into neurosurgery has heard about it, one of the big things that is fun is the annual neurosurgery softball tournament. And that was an easy topic of discussion.
Wow, I did not know there was such a thing. So who won last year?
So this, obviously COVID made things a little bit difficult. I think it was Miami, but I'm honestly not sure. I'm from a smaller program, so we don't have enough people to go to it, unfortunately.
That's super cool. I didn't know such a thing existed, but it really can bring you guys all together across the country. So a lot of the times in interviews, there can be tough questions. And I was just wondering if you had any of those or if you recall any of your peers having them along the way on the trail.
So I remember hearing about a few places, and this is neurosurgery specific, but a few places that asked pimp questions during interviews, but that's generally frowned upon because it really doesn't tell you much about the person. And I didn't have anything like that happen to me. In general, I found that interviewers weren't out for a gotcha moment where they've caught you in something that they don't know and are trying to trying to find those cracks. Some interviewers went very in depth discussing my research. So again, really make sure you know all of your research papers inside and out. But I wouldn't consider those tough questions because as long as you prepare appropriately, they'll be easy to answer. But again, it can vary by where you go, and you just kind of have to be prepared to take some time, think through it. It's more about answering in general, I think, than trying to find the perfect answer for some difficult question.
So true. And no matter if you're first author on a paper, middle author, or last, no matter what your role was, you need to be able to articulate well and understand exactly what that paper was about and why you participated in it.
So totally agree.
you know, along with that, sometimes, especially within surgical fields, people are asked inappropriate questions rather than, you know, be about political beliefs or relationship status or pregnancy if you're a female or family in general. And so how do you advise an applicant respond to some of these questions?
So, fortunately, I can't think of too many inappropriate questions I was asked during the interview trail. It's funny you mentioned politics. I actually had just one place. There was one guy who asked, tell me without kind of like going into detail, who are you voting for? Because 4 years ago was the last election. And he told everybody afterwards, like, I don't actually care who you vote for. I just want you to be comfortable just telling me something and not and not like trying to explain it away. But besides that, there was one question I remember being frequently asked, and this was about a former mentor of mine whose political reputation in the field had rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. And I won't name names, but that question always made me uncomfortable. As med students and residents, you don't get to choose who works in your particular subspecialty at your school, and you're going to have great people, and you're going to have people who don't have as good a reputation. So I didn't really feel that his reputation should have any bearing on my application. I'm not saying that it did, but I didn't like the question. So I still had to answer it. So what I did was I tried to strike a balance between distancing myself from his beliefs while also giving him credit for mentoring me as a med student. You don't want to go out trashing people, anybody. It's just a really bad idea because it comes off as low and unprofessional. And if you do it to one person, people are going to wonder if you're going to do it to other people too. I didn't really like the question, thought it was somewhat inappropriate, but ultimately you can't not answer a question. So you just need to do your best to figure out a diplomatic answer. And that's the advice I'd give. You might get asked an inappropriate question at some point, but you still have to find a way to answer it in the moment. And there are ways to report it if you really think it's out of line. I won't go into specifics, but you can look that up if you really are uncomfortable by something someone said. But in the moment, it's really not worth confronting those.
I love that answer. You just never know when you're going to come in contact with someone later in life and what your career trajectory is going to be. So always be nice and diplomatic and never be negative and put other people down. You know, along the way, there's also these like weird, unusual or unique questions, like what type of kitchen appliance or what color crayon you might want to be. Did you ever get like any of those or types of questions that were sort of more abnormal?
Yeah, I didn't get any of the, you find a wallet on the side of the street, what do you do? But there's one question in particular, and I don't remember the exact wording, but this one in particular really stuck in my mind. So I'm going to paraphrase here, but essentially the question was, as a surgical specialty, technical skills, ability to anticipate and adapt to changes in the OR, those are very important, but those types of skills are really difficult to measure or test, especially in someone who's just coming out of med school. They don't really have surgical training, which is where you learn a lot of those things. And so it isn't something that's tested for in applicants. So the question to me was with that, if you had to design a test that could be used during interviews to test these skills, what would you do and why? And honestly, I don't remember exactly how I responded. It was 4 years ago. I actually really liked the question because it made me think a lot of the questions you get are going to be pretty repetitive. You're going to get used to the typical questions, and the further along you get, kind of be comfortable just rattling off answers. But this one made me stop, think, and I thought it was interesting and relevant. So that one, I actually enjoyed answering.
That is a wonderful question. It is something that I haven't heard before. So a lot of the times, you get 15 minutes or even less, sometimes more with the program director during an interview day. And I was wondering what questions you recommend an applicant ask of the program director during an interview.
Yeah, so it's always a bit difficult to come up with interesting questions for PDs or, you know, any attending really during the interview process, without getting into cliches like, you know, what do you think sets your program apart, or what are the most important attributes you look for in applicants? So my general approach was to research all of the attendings before each interview, and just try to find a few things each person was interested in, whether that be research or their specialty, or, you know, if they listed other stuff like something fun, hobbies that they like to do, you know, that was even better. Then when I got to the part where we were, he asked if I had any questions, and just asked a very general question about one of those interests, like, you know, can you tell me how you balance research time with your clinical practice, or, you know, what is it about skull-based surgery that got you interested in the field, and what do you enjoy most about it, or, you know, what are some of your favorite things to do in your off time? And my goal wasn't really to dig for information as much as it was to try and start a conversation. You know, people like talking about themselves and what they enjoy, and interviews can get pretty boring. So if you can find a way to break down the formality of the interview process, I think that'll make you memorable and make a good impression. Now, that being said, if you have actual questions about the residency program that haven't been answered, by all means, use your time with the PD or chair to ask those questions. But in my experience, most general questions about the program structure, rotations, call schedule, et cetera, those are going to be answered during a general session before interviews begin.
So true. A lot of the times you'll come with like a set of prepared questions and realize that it's already answered during the first 30 minutes and then wonder what to do. And it's important for applicants to recognize that it's not just about who you are clinically or, you know, who you are as a researcher, but they also want to see that you are a person that they can spend time with outside the hospital. And I think you make a very clear point in that and the importance of it. There's also times where you have these pre-interview dinners, which are now virtual, and you're given an opportunity to speak with resident physicians. And in surgical fields, especially within neurosurgery, you know, you're all incredibly busy. And so this time is meaningful for the applicant, but also, you know, the resident wants to feel like they got the most meaningful questions asked. So how would you recommend that an applicant ask questions of residents during these dinners?
Right. So this year, like you mentioned, first year it's virtual. It's going to be different for both sides, and I think that's important for applicants to remember. I'm sure it feels weird, but trust me, it feels weird from our end too. But I think the same principles apply. So what I'd say is that, you know, remember that residents and attendings are always going to be on their best behavior. So they're going to put a positive spin on their program, because of that, you know, questions about autonomy in the OR or, you know, camaraderie amongst the residents, although those are valid and important questions, those are usually going to get the answers you'd expect. So yeah, we have lots of autonomy, and yes, our case numbers and case complexity are great, and, you know, we all get along really well. No one's going to give you dirt on their own program. So in my opinion, it's just not really worth spending a bunch of time pursuing those types of questions. I do think the most important thing you can get out of your virtual dinners with residents is a general feel for who the residents are as people, and whether or not you get along with them. Now, every program is a little different, and you know, there might be a really great program in terms of reputation where you just don't get along with the residents, and other programs that you didn't really know anything about where you feel like you just click really well. You know, getting along with your co-residents is extremely important, especially in neurosurgery where there are so few residents per class. You know, you might be able to hide from residents you don't like and specialties with bigger classes, although, you know, that doesn't mean it's not important there too. But, you know, in neurosurgery, you really can't do that. So for me, you know, my general gestalt for each group of residents was an important factor in my rankings. And there were some places I felt like I really connected with the residents, and, you know, other places, and then there were, you know, only a handful of places where you know, I really didn't feel like we clicked, not that it was anything wrong with them. We were just very different people. And so, you know, how do you figure that out? You know, I just try and spend less time on specific questions about the program, and just kind of like with the program directors, just try and start conversations. And get to know them. You know, this is also a good time to ask about the city, where residents live. Do people tend to, own or rent? What do they do for fun? But just keep it casual. For neurosurgery, please don't ask if we have an intraoperative MRI. Every year, there's a couple people who ask that question, and it just doesn't matter.
Well, I know we share one big thing in common, that we both love the city of St. Louis and think it is a great place for residents to live, and there are lots of fun things to do. And so I do agree that it is important, especially in smaller cities that are not New York, LA, or Miami, to really get a feel of a city, especially in a virtual environment when you may not be able to visit. So, in neurosurgery, it is so competitive. And I was just wondering if you have any tips for those when putting together their rank lists for residency programs when it comes to February.
For me, like I was talking about, the way I felt about the residents and got along with them was a very important part of my ranking. 7 years is a long time to be stuck with a group of people you don't get along with. So that was probably the single most important factor for me. Location didn't matter that much for me personally, but it's often a very important factor for many applicants. I also talked to other applicants I knew and tried to find people who had rotated at each program to get more information on the atmosphere. Like we discussed earlier, everyone's on their best behavior on interview day. Trying to get a real feel for exactly what the atmosphere is like can be difficult. So this is where firsthand accounts from other applicants can really give you another perspective. Although I will say that, you have to be a little bit careful about relying too much on word of mouth. It's like playing telephone. You just can't trust all the information you get. So take everything you hear with a grain of salt. Obviously this year's different. There weren't any away rotations, so that throws a bit of a stick into the wheels, but there are still, you can still try and reach out to applicants about their home programs and get more information that way.
Love that. You're right. So many people know everything about their home program. They may have even done more rotations at their home program this year because they couldn't go away to do a sub-I, or to reach out to graduates from your medical school who are currently in specialties and residency programs. They'll tend to give you their honest opinion about how they feel about their program that they're in. So you've given us such great advice. And I think it's really important to be able to give you an opportunity to, let us know anything else about the application or residency interview process that you haven't shared.
So the one thing I'd say that I haven't said yet, and I think this is actually one of the most important pieces of advice I could give about the ranking, is this. And I'm going to preface this by saying this is really for neurosurgery. I don't know if this applies for other specialties, but for neurosurgery, really think hard about which program you rank number one. So in general, it's true that you should rank in order of your preference. So what programs you like, figure out which programs you like the most without consideration for where you think you have the best chances getting in, or other information. In neurosurgery, though, there's one exception to this rule, and that's your number one pick. It's the dirty little secret that isn't really a secret, and that's that applicants are expected to let their number one pick know that they're ranking them number one. It's important to remember programs are not allowed to ask you how you're ranking them, and I never had a program do that, but it's well known in neurosurgery that the applicants let their number one program know after the fact, after they've made their rank list. And so why is this important? The likelihood that an applicant will rank your program high is a very important factor in how programs rank applicants. They don't want to waste a high rank on someone they don't think they have a shot at getting. But figuring that out can be difficult. And one of the few exceptions to that is if an applicant said that they're ranking you number one. And that commitment, because of that, that commitment can make a difference in your ranking, but only if it's done strategically. So the key is to not waste your number one pick on a program you know is a huge stretch for you. So In that case, telling them they're your number one may move you up a couple of slots, but if you think it's a huge stretch to begin with, those few slots are less likely to make a difference. So with that in mind, my recommendation for figuring out your rank list in terms of your number one is this. Start by ranking your programs purely in order of preference. Then look at your rank list and choose a program that's high on your list where you think you have a good chance of getting into. This should be your number one pick. So the first three programs on your preference list are long shots for you. But the fourth one on your list, you think you have a really good chance of getting in. You made a good impression on your interviews. Then, you know, maybe number four should be your number one pick. And then after that, everything else should be in preference. So that would be my neurosurgery specific advice for the rank list.
Especially in a small field that is so competitive like neurosurgery, you want to be able to play your cards right. And you also want to only tell one program that they are your number one because you don't want to experience any negative consequences later along the trail, because people talk. And then especially in a small field like yours, you want to make sure that you are doing it in the most appropriate way. So, you know, Ryan, thanks so much for your time being in neurosurgery. You're spending a lot of time in the hospital doing research, doing clinical work, and we're so appreciative of all that you've shared today. We like to end our podcast by getting to know a little bit more about you outside of the interview trail. So can you share a fun fact about yourself?
Sure. So let's see. My hobby that keeps me sane is distance running. I've only gotten into this in the past couple of years. I started it after residency because I used to play sports and I needed to find something to fill that void. So I started running marathons 2 years ago and really enjoyed that. And plan on trying an ultra marathon with one of my med school buddies this next year. Depending on the COVID situation, hopefully a triathlon as well.
Wow, that's impressive. And I have to ask, how long is an ultramarathon?
So an ultramarathon is just anything longer than a marathon. So it can be, 30 miles, or if you're insane, like my friend, he was, before COVID, was training for a 100-mile ultramarathon, which I have no interest in ever doing.
Oh, wow. Well, the fact that you find time to run, I hope to see you running through Forest Park, which is our beautiful park in St. Louis. So, that's all the time we have today with Ryan. Thanks so much for joining us at Inside the Match. Special thanks to Kevin McLeod for the music, and be sure to follow or subscribe to our podcast. Catch our next episode to learn more application tips and hear from another awesome resident.